This is WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, and we're joined in the studio by State Budget Director Blake Washington, who's here to discuss the recently adopted state budget. Blake, thank you so much for making the time, and congrats on your first budget as budget director.
Well, thanks again for having me here once again, and it's been a ride.
Well, for starters, what is the total state operating budget for the new fiscal year? I know the all funds number is hovering somewhere above $237 billion, but for lack of a better expression, I guess, what is the state ponying up?
The state ponies up a little more than half of that, so it's probably about 130. I don't have the number in front of me, roughly that amount of money. State's funds, which is comprised of the general fund and a whole host of fees and taxes and surcharges that have been in place for quite some time. None of them were raised during this year's budget, but the state itself pays well over $100 billion in, towards the budget. The balance is, of course, federal funds.
So the culmination of the budget deal meant we had updated budget bills, both policy legislation and appropriation bills, and there have been press releases with some of the high-level dollar amounts like that total spending number. But we haven't gotten that detailed financial plan, which would allow me to avoid asking you basic questions like how much the state operating funds are going to be. How come that information isn't public yet?
Well, first and foremost, I think state law provides us an opportunity to finesse the numbers, make sure that everything is in its right place. We do not have to submit it until 30 days after enactment of the budget. The budget is officially enacted as of tomorrow, or as of today, rather. And what we do in the interim is we work with our units. We make sure that the spending that as we project it is accommodated in the financial plan. We look over a time horizon, and we align everything across all disciplines. So it takes a little bit of time to do that. We also closed out the books for 2024, so it's all just a matter of harmonizing the two.
Would it inhibit the budget division in any way to put out some additional details when that budget deal is struck so that state lawmakers and other interested parties would have a better sense of the financials that are being approved? Would that stop you from doing your jobs in any way?
I would say it inhibits us. I would just say it may inhibit some processes. As you know, the budget process is one that's long and laborious, and nobody runs unless they're chased around here. So the last 2, 3, 4, 5 days of budget making are really round-the-clock operations. The Division of Budget staff do Herculean work to just do the work of the people, to get budget bills processed, to make sure the final deals are intact, to make sure the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. And that's just on what's being deliberated upon in that moment of time. So it's more about inertia. It's about what's going on at this moment in time. At the end of the budget, it's all hands on deck to just drag this thing across the finish line. The financial plan, we're mindful of that throughout. We hold the line on spending for sure. But it's just a matter of, first and foremost, getting the priority of the work done, getting it before the legislature so they can do their work. And then we transition into the more formalized financial plan drafting process.
So the final price tag for the state budget is about $4 billion above what the governor proposed. And as far as I'm aware, there are no new taxes on high income earners or businesses, for the most part, to fund the increase. So is the additional revenue just coming from revised tax collection estimates for this fiscal year?
A little bit of both. So we did have some good news since we last spoke, I think a handful of months ago. We were watching tax revenues. They declined precipitously last year. And when we came into the executive budget this year, we saw some improvement, but we were still pretty guarded in the executive proposal, noting that the strength of the economy, as confirmed by blue chip consensus reports across the board, nationwide experts.
And Hugh Johnson.
And Hugh Johnson. Everybody sort of monitors the store and watches the economic fundamentals, which fuel our revenue projections. January into February, we saw some really wonderful market activity that really improved our state's financial position. The state of New York, as you know, is really reliant upon Wall Street for so much of what we do. And the financial picture improved greatly. So that is one portion of the increase in spending that you saw. But also a lot of the delta relates to additional capital appropriations. So you'll see in collaboration with the legislature, we added probably $600 million in capital appropriations for housing alone and a whole host of other important initiatives, transportation and the like, that are all comprised within that $4 billion change.
So when we think about that $238 billion number, it's not necessarily all things that we're going to be paying for in the current fiscal year?
Precisely. precisely. Certainly capital takes a while to draw down. You might make a commitment this year. And depending on how exigent the process or the project is, it may take 2 or 3 or 4 years to spend down.
Well, sticking with the revenue side of the equation, a late addition to the budget negotiation conversation was a new tax on Medicaid managed care plans. How will that work, and why is it a smart move for New York to head down this path?
Well, I think the way it'll work starting there is we've have some other states in the nation that have also availed themselves of this tax. And it's a broad-based uniform tax that applies to managed care plans. And what it will ultimately do is drive new revenue in support of our Medicaid program. The state of New York has one of the most robust Medicaid programs in the entire nation. We think that the federal government can do a lot more for the state of New York in supporting our cause. We get, on average, about 50% of our costs paid for by the federal government, where other states have a much more generous cost-sharing ratio. The managed care organization tax will help to sort of right a little bit of that balance. It'll bring new resources to the state of New York that we can pledge into our health sector. The health sector is in a period of change, rapid change post-pandemic. Consumers are voting with their feet. They're seeking services in different places, and we want to make sure that the state of New York's health system is ready for all those contingencies while also supporting the base. We have hospitals that have every need in the world. We have a nursing home sector that's got some real troubles, and so this MCO tax could really improve rates for all sorts of providers. Could also help to just defray some of the state's costs that we're incurring in the Medicaid program. In the last couple of years alone, we've been growing at a pretty healthy clip as well. So it makes good sense for us to try to draw down these revenues, because absent them, we'd take more aggressive action in the Medicaid program to control costs.
Well, yeah, I want to talk about how you envision this money being spent. But on the side of things, in terms of actually bringing in the money, is this a case where, as proponents of the tax argue, that it's not going to actually impact the operators in New York State and thus trickle down to consumers of the healthcare system, and that this will be basically a convoluted way of taxing the federal government and we're not going to have to pay ourselves?
The goal is to have the federal government do a lot more in supporting the state's Medicaid program, and while at the same time not foisting new taxes onto Medicaid consumers or commercial consumers at the same time. So it's a balance, but fundamentally what it's trying to do is ask the federal government to do a lot more than they're doing today to support the robust Medicaid program in the state of New York.
So you said the goal is to have the federal government carry the weight of this, but I have a goal to weigh under 200 pounds by my birthday on June 9th. It's not going to happen, though. So I'm curious whether you think there is a possibility that businesses that operate in the healthcare space in New York will end up shouldering additional costs because of this.
Well, there's a model for this. This has happened in other states, you know, California, and the business burden was negligible. Certainly the governor is very mindful of any new business burden being foisted upon any small or large business in the state of New York. So we're going to keep an eye out for that. But when you see what the assessment was in the state of California, you had a larger side assessment on the Medicaid plans. We were able to make the plans whole, whereas on the commercial side, it was a de minimis per member per month increase for any commercial payer.
Well, then turning to how we envision actually spending this money, how much is the state looking to bring in from this gambit, and are you expecting any of it for the current fiscal year?
We may get some at the very end of the fiscal year, January through March, but reality sort of says to me that I think we'll want to make sure we get the receipts in hand and then have a more deliberate process in cataloging and trying to sketch out how those are going to be spent. That's a dialogue that'll be undertaken with the legislature and stakeholders. So I think that the first time you'll see actual spending against it would be in the next fiscal year. The amount that we'll get is really TBD. The state of California, which has double our residents, their annual benefits roughly $4 billion. We're going to do our best to maximize whatever the state of New York can reasonably expect from this tax.
So at this point, are you, as you think about your financial plan, budgeting this money into healthcare costs for fiscal year 2026, which counterintuitively starts April of 2025?
When you see the financial plan, when it comes out, we didn't necessarily budget the costs into the financial plan because we need a bird in hand before we plan on this. The governor's made several entreaties to the federal government to lay the groundwork to get these funds. there's no firm commitment that we're going to get them. So as a result, the governor is not going to put the state financial plan at risk if these funds don't materialize. Now, we have every expectation that they will, but the financial plan will not include the funds until we actually have them in hand. And so we would know that by, you know, later in the fiscal year.
Assuming the money is greenlit by the federal government, do you have concerns about how the money would be spent in terms of recurring costs versus one-time investments? Because people smarter than me in this space indicate that federal government is going to shut the spigot off at some point as it pertains to this financial maneuver.
A number one question that goes through any budget director's mind is what's recurring and what's one-time. The governor's charge, when we receive these funds, once we know what the annual amount is, once we know the duration of that amount, 1, 2, 3 years, then sketch something out that spends the resources over a period of time that probably goes, a horizon that probably goes beyond the years of receipt. So you can actually, as they start to wind down, you can start to wind up state costs to meet them. You want to make sure there's an off-ramp and an on-ramp at the same time where you're actually doing this in a responsible way. We don't want to create a cliff in year 4, year 5, or whatever the year is. You don't want to just have the spigot churn off and then the state of New York, taxpayers in the state of New York, have to come up with, you know, several billions of dollars to meet the gap. We want to make sure we're minding the store and aligning those two.
So you don't want to do like a Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid or Bonnie and Clyde and just sort of go over the cliff? That's not appealing to you?
That is definitely not appealing to me.
And after a quick break, we'll have more with New York State Budget Director Blake Washington.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Resorts World New York. With over 1 million square feet of space to play, relax, and celebrate, Resorts World New York City hosts more than 5 million visitors a year. That makes Resorts World a significant social and economic partner for local businesses and residents alike. Through its operations and outreach programs, Resorts World has generated more than $4 billion for the state educational system and 1,400 jobs for the people of Queens. More information at rwnewyork.com.
For listeners just joining us, this is the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our conversation about the state's recently adopted $237 billion state budget with New York State Budget Director Blake Washington. So a budget is a reflection of the priorities and values of the policymakers who craft it. So what does the adopted state budget tell us about the legislature and Governor Hochul and their values and priorities?
Well, I think that this budget, you'll find that there are record investments in our public education system, in our healthcare system, supporting the base in our mental hygiene system, all things that certainly foremost priorities to the governor, making sure that the needs of every New Yorker are met wherever they may be, from Long Island to Buffalo to the North Country. I think that when you look at this budget, you'll see some statewideness to it, where we're addressing statewide concerns, certainly the area of public safety. While not pertaining to spending directly, it does achieve some really important victories for communities throughout the state, certainly as it relates to retail theft and cannabis enforcement, making sure that limousine operators are operating in an appropriate way. Those things are common to every community throughout the state. Housing, we, of course, did a pretty big initiative we're so proud about. The governor was written off a couple of months ago. Will she still pursue an ambitious housing agenda? And I think that New Yorkers have found in the last couple of weeks since enactment that, yes, indeed, we were able to secure some really major victories on housing due to the governor's perseverance and our partnership with the legislature. Begins in the city of New York, but then we have a whole host of investments for the rest of the state. A lot of new capital construction initiatives. We have anti-price gouging initiatives to make sure that people can remain in their homes without unconscionable rent increases. There's also, if people look at this budget, there's probably a level of partnership there between the state and local governments. Certainly New York City, we talk a lot about some investments, certainly on their migrant response, $2.4 billion in this year's budget for that. Mayoral accountability, a whole host of other items that the mayor of the city of New York has asked for, and we partner with him in enacting, which are extraordinarily important. Governor's budget had a whole host of initiatives for the counties to make sure that we have a partnership program for them to do some new housing, and we didn't foist new costs onto them. We protected the counties by addressing in-rem foreclosure processes, harmonizing that throughout the state, which is extraordinarily important for them. We've had our first AIM increase in 10 plus years.
And that's aid to municipalities.
Aid to municipalities. So our cities, towns, and villages all got a little bit more than they did for the last well over a decade. So I think that coming away from this, you'll see there's a level of partnership there too. And certainly, I would just end by saying that the budget doesn't create new burdens for New Yorkers, no new tax burdens for New Yorkers. And I think we're really, really proud of that while maintaining record reserves and sort of holding the line on the fiscal prudence was really, really important to us.
You talked about the idea of meeting the needs of every New Yorker. And the sad fact is there are a lot of New Yorkers, including children, who live in poverty. Most notably, this budget includes $50 million in new spending for a targeted anti-poverty initiative. But are there any other investments to address this issue, which experts say will require billions upon billions of dollars?
Well, I think one of the last items we negotiated with the legislature, which we're really happy to have done, was a $350 million tax credit for the child tax credit. The governor last year expanded the child tax credit to families that have children ages 0 to 4.
That pesky age when they weren't covered before.
Yes. So that was we accomplished that last year. This year we have a credit that's needs-based to those same families, a little bit extra in their pockets as a result of that action. The state law continues to roll out a minimum wage increase. And just working in general on the housing supply helps families, helps young people have a sense of stability when their folks can stay in the same place and have a safe home to rely upon. When we invest in our budget, we look at child poverty, we look at how we're teaching our children. It has to be multi-pronged. It has to be, we look at our investments in schools, you know, a $36 billion state commitment to our public schools. Many of our young people that live in poverty, that's where they get a lot of their human interaction, their social skills, sometimes their breakfast and lunch, for sure. A lot of the social supports are being delivered to our children through their public schools, so we're really proud that we're able to invest that heavily there. In many cases, mental hygiene supports are delivered through public schools. Public health supports are delivered to public schools. This budget also includes continued eligibility for CHIP, for Child Health Plus, so that our young people 0 to 6 continue to become eligible for publicly sponsored health insurance. Certainly our Medicaid program is robust as well. So we check a lot of boxes. This budget, when the governor looks at it, she looks at she's sort of is like a family-centric governor, looking at how low we can get to, what's the lowest level where we can actually impact these kids. Like, it's not like a theoretical thing for the governor. She wants to make sure that the dollars and the supports are getting to our children. She doesn't think of it some more of like an academic exercise. It's how do we get it to where it needs to be? And I think that when you cut across each one of the disciplines in our budget, you'll see that there's a lot there.
So sticking with the child credit for a second, my understanding is that this is at least billed as a one-time supplement. Is that your understanding, or is there reason to believe that this is the new baseline moving forward?
It's a one-time supplement for sure, but we've done it before. I think the last time we did this was 2 years ago. So it's a nice opportunity, particularly when the state of New York witnessed an additional bit of receipts that were unforeseen, to pledge some of those back to the neediest among us. It was a no-brainer for us.
Well, before we move on, let me just reintroduce you for listeners just joining us. This is the Capitol Press Room, and we're speaking with New York State Budget Director Blake Washington about the state's recently adopted state budget. Sticking with kids, after a fight between the legislature and governor over education spending levels, the final budget includes a commitment to study the future distribution of foundation aid, which accounts for the bulk of the education money from the state. Is there merit to studying other pots of state education dollars like expense-based aid or STAR money, which add up to more than $12 billion annually?
Yeah, it always makes sense to see how we're spending it. And I think certainly on the expense-based aids, there's, you know, somebody that has been doing budgets for quite some time, some of the timing and when those are filed is kind of irksome because it throws off your projections at times when you're not expecting. I think everything is if we're being intellectually honest, everything should be revisited periodically, make sure we're doing it correctly, making sure that the state taxpayer dollars are being spent in an appropriate way. I think taking our first step on the foundation aid formula is really, really important. It's been 15 years since these data were updated, and you know, some of the metrics that are used are moot, universally considered moot, because they're just not tracked in a real way any longer. But then there's some other things, other proxies that people have been talking about, educational experts have been talking about for a while, that might be a better substitute for some of those very same variables. So I think we're really looking forward to see what the Rockefeller Institute of Government can do to shed some light on these topics, and then we'll move forward in next year's budget.
Do you envision taking whatever the Rockefeller Institute and SED comes up with on this issue and just dumping it into the executive proposal, or will there be some finagling in between the report being introduced and the budget coming out?
Well, the legislation, that the authorization is not self-executing. It's going to be a series of recommendations. It's intended to be so. We, as I said earlier, we already spent $36 billion on public schools in this year's budget. It'll be a discussion, a dialogue between us and the legislature as we move forward. You know, the State Education Department will also have a lot to say about this. I think it's going to be, in a perfect world, I know the governor would love to see a level of collaboration where everybody gives a little bit, everybody wins a little bit, and we actually, in long term, get into put ourselves on a path of like of sane investment in our public schools, in ways that we're pledging our resources where they're needed most.
Well, we've been speaking with Blake Washington. He is the director of the state's budget office. Blake, thank you so much for making the time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a statewide union of nearly 700,000 professionals in education and healthcare.